And I want to extend a special invitation to our Spanish-speaking friends to help us catch all the nuances of the film. So come celebrate our special month by joining us at the Brooklyn Commons, 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. That's Thursday, November 29th, 7 p.m. for Even the Rain.
Join the African Diaspora International Film Festival from November 23rd to December 9th and celebrate Black life on the big screen. Discover over 60 entertaining and revealing fiction and documentary films from over 30 countries. Explore ADIFF's identity politics and Black Panther program. Discover Kofi Annan's suspended dream and the life of 2018 Nobel Peace Prize winner, Dr. Dennis Mukwege. The African Diaspora International Film Festival, November 23rd to December 9th in Manhattan. For tickets and schedule, go to nyadiff.org or call 212-864-1760. This is where Black Lives Matter.
Do you want your favorite WBAI programming to continue to air without the Fun Drive Day preemption? Becoming a BAI buddy is a great way to prevent that and to help support the station. Just by going to give to WBAI.org, you can donate today. So before you decide to buy that electronic accessory for your smartphone, here are some more fulfilling ways to use that money with some perks. You can use your WBAI membership card and receive discounts on Zipcar, 2 for the price of 1 admission at the Museum of the City of New York, 20% off sessions with life and career coach Nina Della Vecchia, and much more. You will also receive a WBAI tote bag, which you can use to carry around some on-air giveaways. For more information, go to give2, that's the number 2, WBAI.org.
And you're listening to WBAI New York. The time is 8 o'clock. Time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And Alex.
Good evening.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Try that again, Alex.
Good evening.
That's better. Yeah, we missed you last week.
I missed you guys.
Well, I think we all missed each other. But we're back now, we have a full hour to talk about the news of the week and technological developments and things like that. Good news, bad news, whatever we have. And let's start with something that's a bit disturbing, and that is something concerning Amazon. No, not that story. The story of them kicking all unauthorized Apple refurbishers off of Amazon Marketplace. Rob, I know you've been bringing this story to our attention. What does this mean?
Well, for those unfamiliar, Amazon Marketplace is basically an open marketplace where people who have stuff can list that stuff for sale and then, you know, ship it either directly to the purchaser or to Amazon or whatever. Anyway, you can sell stuff on Amazon.com from your little shop. But Apple has an agreement with Amazon now that's going to prevent people from being able to sell refurbished Apple products. Now, in this country, we have something called the first sale doctrine, which I'm sure Alex can tell us more about. But that the long and the short of it is that if you have a thing, you're able to resell that thing. You're able to...
If you have a thing. Okay.
If you have a thing, you're able to resell that thing. You're able to, you know, sell it on in, you know, whatever fashion you manage to. But Amazon, because of its power in the marketplace, is basically... Going beyond that, preventing you from doing that legal thing with their site. So it's they have a deal with five, I think, companies that are probably, you know, large amounts of money are changing hands, but only those five companies are going to be able to refurbish Apple products for use on the site.
Well, no, okay, let me just ask a question, actually, of both of you. It's not illegal for people to go and fix Apple products on their own, is it?
Not necessarily, no, but it could void warranties of newer Apple products, though.
But beyond that, there's a software kill switch in newer Apple products, which prevents people, most hobbyists, from being able to repair something because you need to then authorize it through Apple's proprietary servers. And if that's not done, the device will be a brick.
Wow. Why do people still buy Apple? I don't understand this. It's such a hostile way of treating the people who are loyal to you to do this kind of thing to them. I don't get it.
Well, I think that's part of the problem here is that the newer Apple models of laptops, et cetera, that have come out are missing a lot of things that we would ordinarily consider to be necessary for interoperability. Things like USB ports, right? I mean, you know, HDMI ports, the things that you want on a laptop so that you can use it, you know, to give a presentation, for, you know, connecting to larger monitors. You know, it's just the way in which they have systematically eliminated a lot of functions that are ordinarily associated with laptops, I think has become a big problem for Apple for their current line, the current models. So for people like me, yeah, I recently bought a brand new, it was a refurbished from Amazon laptop by Apple.
Keep the receipt, it'll be worth something.
Seriously,
someday.
Tell me about it. But I purchased a 2015 model, and actually, after laborious research with Voltaire, by the way, about which model we should get based on the needs of our firm, we decided to go with a refurbished 2015 laptop, you know, from Amazon. And it came, you know, perfectly, you know, there's a tiny little nick on it, but it's a beast of a machine. It works. It has everything I want on it. I would never get one of these newer lines. And I think that this is Apple's push now, you know, because I think a lot of consumers are opting for the older lines and not buying the newer stuff, that they want to try to eliminate the ability for these sellers, these smaller refurbishment sellers, to actually have a marketplace to sell their goods.
You're saying this is a result of Apple's ineptitude in marketing new products, that Amazon is helping them by basically banning people from trying to refurbish their older products, which people prefer.
Yes.
That's what you're saying.
Amazon agreed to this deal. It was a foreseeable and intentional consequence, I think, of the particular deal that they struck.
You know, when you said Apple and then Amazon, I just had a vision that Apple and Amazon are going to be the same at some point.
Oh, God.
They're going to merge. One's going to buy the other. I could see it happening.
You never know.
Wow.
You never know.
And the thing with this, too, is that now that Apple has this deal in place with Amazon, you know, maybe we'll freak out about it now, but I'm sure the grumbling will eventually die down and they'll just go ahead with it without a problem, as these things do. And then who is Apple going to next want that agreement with? Will it be eBay? You know, will it be, you know, whatever other behemoth they can get hold of and decide, you know, bang goes the law. We want you to enforce our rules instead, you know, and... Repairability, or reparability, depending on how you want to say it, is has always been a very strong element of computers since home computers started being a thing. You know, I'm using a smartphone right now that I've replaced the motherboard in and, you know, gone through like three different batteries.
Hey, my first computer was the Heathkit Z100, which I built myself.
Exactly. And that's something that people who have hobbies like ours or people who just want to save a little money depend on to get maybe older generation stuff at a better deal or, you know, just be able to keep using a thing if it breaks. And I think this is very dangerous because it really takes a lot of our options away. It's like the John Deere tractor thing where you can't fix it yourself now without John Deere's own software. You know, you're not buying a thing anymore. You're buying the right to hold on to a thing until the people who own the thing tell you you can't anymore.
Well, now, people who have been selling these products, services on Amazon have gotten an email that basically says, or actually says, as part of a new agreement with Apple, we are working with a select group of authorized resellers to offer an expanded selection of Apple and Beats products, including new releases in Amazon stores. You notice how they always make it sound like they're actually expanding and doing more things. You are receiving this message because you are currently selling or have previously sold Apple or Beats products. Your existing offers for those products will soon be removed from Amazon's online store in the United States. Please contact Apple if you would like to apply to become an authorized reseller on Amazon. It's interesting, the line, in the United States, does that mean it's not happening in Canada? I'm curious what people in Canada have gotten.
Well, the expression of one thing is usually to the exclusion of others. It's a canon of statutory interpretation.
Now, what's involved in becoming an authorized reseller? Are they fairly permissive as far as giving out, I don't know, licenses or whatever to become an official authorized reseller? Or is that something that's pretty much exclusive?
My understanding of this is that it's actually extremely difficult to become an authorized reseller. If you think about just New York as a marketplace, right? There are very few authorized Apple resellers in the city of New York. One of which actually just closed down, I think, about a year and a half ago, TechServe on 23rd Street, was a huge Apple reseller, and they did repairs, and they were pretty much known throughout the five boroughs as the place to go if you wanted your Apple laptop repaired or you wanted to buy something that was refurbished. But they're gone. They were gigantic.
They were authorized or unauthorized?
They were authorized. Okay. They were an authorized reseller. But I think there was Mike's Tech Shop, maybe the only other one in the city, perhaps. But, you know, there's very, very few. The point I'm trying to make is it's very difficult and there's very few. And this is going to severely limit customer choice when it comes to purchasing Apple products. That's a big problem. And to go back to what you were saying earlier, too, is when we power on these laptops these days, the kids that buy them, the, you know, college kids, high school kids that have them. Like you said, I can remember the model of the first computer you had, the Heathkit.
Heathkit.
Oh, yeah. Heathkit.
I hear
okay.
They're back too. I hear that they're Heathkit products again.
I'm not so surprised.
That's good news. But I mean, it's a magical machine.
My first computer was an XT that ran at 4 megahertz, 640K conventional memory with a 30 megabyte hard drive, and I spent the entire summer taking that thing apart.
Dual processors, 8085 and 8088. Ran MS-DOS 1.0.
Wow.
Beat that, if you will.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was on MS-DOS 3.1 when I started. But I mean,
monochrome screen, all in one, and a keyboard that you would dream of. You know, the typewriter keyboard with, you know, indented. Yeah, clickety. Oh, it's great.
That sounds
built
amazing.
In.
I had CGA, so you know that was light years after you.
Uh-huh.
But in any event, the point I'm making here is that you should be able to rip these things apart because you don't want to look at technology as magic. You want to understand what's going on underneath the hood. Apple doing this and then systematically removing all the refurbished sellers is really doing, I think, a number on our ability to actually understand technology. I mean, they want to hire programmers. They're constantly hiring people. But how are we going to teach the next generation if we can't rip these things apart? If the kids can't, like I did, spend the entire summer indoors breaking things, putting it back together, it just doesn't exist anymore.
I notice you're not carrying a rotary phone around with you. You're carrying around a smartphone that you can't take that apart either.
I have a rotary in my briefcase.
All right.
And a candlestick.
That's a fair point.
As you like.
Go ahead, Rob.
You were asking about how you become one of these preferred retailers who's still allowed to do it, and there's no public information on that. But the article in Vice Motherboard that I was reading on this has cites its own Amazon certified refurbisher program called Amazon Renewed, which is separate from this whole thing, but it's possibly comparable. And the requirements to sell Apple products under that program are known. You have to prove to Amazon that you spend at least $2.5 million every 90 days.
Whoa. Hold on a second. Why in God's name is that a requirement? $2.5 million in what period of time?
In every 90 days, buying Apple products directly from a national wireless carrier or retailer with over $5 billion in annual sales.
Get the feeling they're trying to weed out the people interested in this.
Yeah, I don't think many small businesses can get in on this action.
They wouldn't be small businesses if they met that criteria.
Exactly. And we can only imagine that the requirements to be one of the preferred retailers who's or repairers who's allowed to keep doing this, you know, it's got to be somewhere comparable.
Okay, so that's Amazon's requirements, right? Now,
yes.
What's to stop somebody from simply having an online site where they continue to offer these services?
Literally nothing. And I think that's a really, really good point.
Okay, so let's register a domain right now and start it.
Okay.
What do you mean no internet?
No, I don't know. What's going on here?
Why don't we have internet? Did we not pay the bill? Okay, well, after the show, we're going to go to a coffee shop, and we're going to register a domain.
Okay,
and then, you know, we'll start something, and we'll show Amazon and Apple that the power of the people cannot be trifled with.
Well, there would be nothing stopping anybody, even us, from doing something like that, and I think that's what is exactly what's going to happen, is people will migrate away from Amazon. I mean, the whole argument we've been having is premised on the assumption that Amazon is the only marketplace that matters. Perhaps that is the case for some of these small businesses that have come to rely on it, which brings up another issue, though. I wonder how many of these small businesses that sell or resold Apple products there are that are going to be affected by this. I'd love to see some transparency there, or to see all of these people, all of these companies raise their hand, because I think there is a really good argument that, you know, there's insufficient notice for them. They're basically given a month and a half, and their entire business model may have been premised on selling these things, or rather reselling them, on Amazon. And because they relied on the fact that the marketplace was there and Amazon was giving them this marketplace, they possibly, you know, stocked their wares, you know, substantially. And now they can't get rid of them, and a lot of them might go out of business, frankly. So I think there could be a legal argument for detrimental reliance on Amazon's promises to keep that marketplace open. Or at least that it would continue to exist. On the other hand, you know, if they were to extend this notice period for 6 months or 12 months, I think that would be another story entirely, because another marketplace could crop up. Excuse me. But having a month and a half to find a completely new marketplace for all of these wares is going to be really, really difficult. And I think a lot of them aren't going to survive. That's the sad thing.
Well, it sounds like they're timing this so that they can get like one more holiday season out of it and then be done. Pushing it 6 months down the road, that might work if there is, you know, some kind of a comparable outlet to Amazon out there.
Yeah, well, here's an idea. Get all of them together, file a class action lawsuit with an injunction against Amazon, have the judge prevent them from shutting down this marketplace until the rest of the case proceeds.
Another possible way of dealing with this, how does Amazon know? How do they know that you're doing this? What is it that alerts them? They don't comb through every single listing, do they?
What happens when you sell stuff like this on Amazon is Amazon already has listings for things, and you have to tell them which of their listings describes the thing you're selling and what condition it's in. So if you can't select the listing for Apple product whatever that you want to sell, then you won't be able to list it on Amazon.
So what if we simply start referring to them as bananas instead of apples, all right? And we know what we're talking about, but Amazon doesn't.
Because
a little secret code language there.
I like that, but it's not. It won't work that way, because it's not a field that you just fill in whatever you like. It's you're selecting from basically a drop-down menu type of thing. This is the thing that I'm selling. And if you select bananas from that, I think you're going to have to mail bananas.
Well, no, I mean, you know, I'm going to have a computer called a banana computer. Are you saying I'm not allowed to do that? I'm not allowed to create my own computer called a banana? and start selling that on Amazon?
See, now that's an interesting...
We're giving you ideas, folks. So, you know, it's up to you to come up with the ideas to make them work and let us know how you're doing. We'll open up the phone lines in about 15 minutes if you're affected by this in some way. Write down the number, 347-335-0818. Don't call now, but we'll be taking phone calls in a little bit on this and other subjects tonight.
Also, the obvious other direction you can take right now if you're one of these businesses who do this is, you know, the next biggest thing is eBay. I guess you could go and start listing your things on there. But, you know, if Apple can strong arm and or wheel and deal their way to Amazon, you know, the 900-pound gorilla of online shopping, you know, eBay can't be far behind, I don't think.
Well, speaking of the 900-pound gorilla that is... coming to our neighborhood soon. Amazon's coming to our neighborhood soon. Wow, Long Island City is going to be the home of HQ2, I believe they call it, or HQ2.5. Apparently, they tricked everybody. They said they were going to open up another headquarters, but actually they're opening up two headquarters, half the size of what they said they were going to have in one. One is going to be in, I think, Crystal City, Virginia, the other in Long Island City. What do you guys think of that?
Oh, speaking as someone who's currently working at a day job in Long Island City, I can only groan and roll my eyes so hard before they leave my skull.
Yeah, good luck getting a city bike.
Exactly. I mean, there's, you know, they've been building the area up and trying to attract more people there. You know, there's tons of empty apartments and things like that going on. But you know, above and beyond what they're saying they might add to the area or bring to the city. You know, okay, they'll have a bunch of jobs in this new facility, but I think they're going to bring people in to fill those jobs. I don't think they're going to go to the surrounding population.
Well, you know, I heard from various reports, and there are definitely various reports. There are going to be 25,000 jobs, and people are going to be making $150,000 at these jobs. Then I was listening to Democracy Now! Today, and I was hearing reports from England of people who make something like $20,000 and are in basically squalor, slave conditions, where they're afraid to go to the bathroom without being disciplined, and if you get six sick days, you're fired, things like that. So I don't know. Who do I believe? Is everybody going to have a $150,000 job, or is it going to be you know, a modern-day sweatshop over there?
I think I might just bring a pushcart to the area and start selling pee bottles to the employees because you know that might be the
that's
hot new
smart
business
that's
model.
That's using your head. Alex, what do you think?
I think there is a lot of uncertainty about this. There's a lot of the unknowns here, but I think a lot of the arguments, in particular arguments from Ocasio-Cortez, our newly elected congresswoman who's yet to be sworn in.
It's coming. It's coming very soon.
It will come very soon.
You'll have to wait.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
But she's been chiming in on this, you know, from the outset. And frankly, you know, the concerns that she has are valid concerns. You know, primarily she's talking about, well, you know, we're giving this gigantic tax cut and this tax break for them to come in here. But we haven't talked about things like, you know, are these employees going to be given adequate health care? What are the wages going to be like? This is what you just mentioned. You know, and what about rent? You know, we need affordable rent in Long Island City and whatnot. Yeah, she's totally right. Those are valid concerns.
And Amazon has a bad record as to how they treat their employees.
They do. They certainly do. But given the promises they've made in order to get the concessions from the city for these major tax breaks, which is, by the way, how this works all over the country. It's not like New York City was the only city in the United States that gives tax breaks to businesses. This is just how businesses are attracted to certain geographical locations.
But isn't the whole point of having a big business like this the fact that they pay taxes?
Yes, but, you know, unfortunately, the businesses get the tax breaks and the employees are the ones that get taxed. Yeah, from their wages.
Well, that's what I'm questioning.
Absolutely. But, you know, we wouldn't have the spurt in the economy if it wasn't for these particular businesses. So they're given these tax breaks, whether it's fair or not. You know, that's a totally different situation. But, you know, I think everything that Ocasio-Cortez has been saying, it's not necessarily those concerns are not necessarily mutually exclusive with Amazon's plans. I mean, we can still have employees with adequate health care, given adequate wages and affordable rent. And if employees are really concerned about that, excuse me, it's actually very easy now to start a union. I would love to see a union crop up of Amazon employees in Long Island City if there are issues with hours, wages, and conditions. Why not?
Well, I'd like to see how it's easy to start a union. People have been having a lot of trouble with that.
All you have to do is organize.
Okay,
it only takes a few.
I don't think it's quite that simple. I mean, yeah, that's the first step, but
sure.
You're met with all kinds of opposition. Just ask the people in Walmart.
Well, it under federal law, it's easier now to start your own union.
Our current federal...
as far as I know, I mean, I haven't checked it, today, mm-hmm. but, it actually has become easier over the last several years in order for workforces to organize. You might get fired from Amazon for doing so, and then we'd have a legitimate gripe, and then maybe we'd want to, yank the tax break from them. But I think that the focusing on the tax break is really a red herring to the argument here. I think the concerns that she has are valid, but I don't think that giving Amazon a huge tax break to come to New York and develop this, I mean, there's going to be a lot of taxes that are generated from the city, both corporate taxes and taxes on things like wages. And then there's going to be a massive amount of development. There's going to be revitalization of Long Island City, as Mr. Firefly here had mentioned. There's plenty of empty apartments. Developers have been trying to fill those apartments. It's going to really revitalize Long Island City, and I think there will be a spillover effect to lots of areas of Queens, which
and
it frankly needs.
Gentrification out of control. I mean, how do we fight that? That's something that always seems to happen as a result of.
I'm not a fan of gentrification, but I am a fan of giving New Yorkers jobs.
Uh huh. Rob,
the thing I'm wondering about is I would really like to hear from any listeners we may have who are from Seattle or were in Seattle, maybe pre and post Amazon. And how that whole thing worked out, did it help your city? Did it actually deliver on the promises that were there? Because this seems like basically a repeat of what they did there. I mean, above and beyond the whole the way they shop themselves around to cities as guess what we can do for you, but which really ended up being, hey, what can you give up from us in order to attract us there? I'd like to see the reactions from people who have been through this.
I wish Kyle was here this week because he's from Seattle, and I've heard him say many times how apartments have gotten out of the reach of people who grew up in the area. A lot of people are coming in from all parts of the world to work in these high tech sector jobs, and I'm worried about what this will do not only to Queens but to the entire surrounding area, including Manhattan and Brooklyn. New York has always been a city where almost anything is possible. But when you have this amount of development happening in one location and fairly suddenly, it's possible the whole landscape could be changed in many ways.
I don't disagree with that, whatsoever. I think there are a lot of valid concerns here. But on the other hand, I do really think that there could be gigantic economic benefits to the city here. And we need it. We need to bring in more jobs. We need more people employed. I think we need this revitalization as well. What bothers me about this whole debate, though, is that as soon as the announcement happened, we saw people like Ocasio-Cortez.
Why are you picking on her? She's not the only one.
She's the most vocal critic of it. She's the one that's in the New York Post and in the Daily News. And
maybe because she's one of the few critics in politics, because I know de Blasio and Cuomo, this is the one thing they seem to be able to agree on, this is a good thing.
Well, they were trying to attract them, just like mm-hmm. every other city in the United States that was under consideration for
which
these
is another
HQs.
Thing. A lot of cities really embarrassed themselves. I think one city was going to rename itself Amazon. Didn't Cuomo say he was going to call himself? What did Cuomo say?
Yeah, he was going to change his name to Amazon Cuomo.
Things like that. Yeah, they're funny, but beneath the dignity of the office and of the city, I think, what I think happened, I think Amazon basically manipulated a lot of these places to fight each other to give the best deal to Amazon, when actually it's Amazon that needs the cities more than the cities need Amazon. They need to be able to be close to high population centers so they can get things out in 1 hour or before you even know to order it or whatever, so they can have their drones flying everywhere. They really need the cooperation of centers like Washington, D.C. and New York. And look where the two headquarters wound up being.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, my primary problem, though, is that I think this is a debate that is lacking in information and lacking in foundation. And what we saw from people like Ocasio-Cortez and these other, I think, out there liberals, and I'm an out there liberal, okay?
Wait, you're an out there liberal criticizing an out there liberal?
Absolutely, because I think out there liberals have a obligation to do things on the basis of rational thought and evidence and make arguments on that basis.
Here's the thing.
What we saw.
When did you learn about this? This week, right?
Yeah.
We all learned about this week.
Exactly my point.
So now, why weren't we talking about this before the offers were made?
Well, because it wasn't transparent. But my point about learning about it and then all of a sudden making a huge stink about it is that this is typical snatching of headlines using some kind of outrage politics. And that doesn't benefit anybody.
Well, how would you do it then? I don't understand how you can criticize this without being accused of that.
I would get more information and base my arguments on the information.
But that's what's happening now. We're getting the information now. We're only finding out about it now.
So people
are reacting rather than just blindly accepting and saying, oh, this is great for the economy, for the people. You know, how about asking the people that live here right now what they think about it? In fact, let's do that. Let's ask the people who live here. You can call 347-335-0818 in 5 minutes, not now. And tell us what you think, how it affects you.
Yes. So to answer your question that I didn't have an opportunity to answer because you kept going over there, was what would I do? I think the real issue is what I wouldn't do. I wouldn't go onto Twitter and start criticizing this on the basis of my moral outrage over a tax break, which is just the way of doing business. To me, that undercuts her entire legitimacy as a politician who should be representing the interests of the people, because this is how business is done. You're naive to think otherwise.
Yeah,
it's
but
silly.
Just because it's how business is done doesn't mean it's right. You know?
Okay, all right. I mean, I get that.
I've heard the same argument given for Olympics, you know, and why they should be in certain cities when they wind up bankrupting a lot of businesses. And you know, I'm thinking about bankrupting. How many establishments would go out of business as a result of all this happening? All this, the brick and mortar stores, like, you know, Sears, for instance, going out of business. They can't compete with places like Amazon. We see what Amazon is doing now with Apple, you know, and what choices do we have? We're hard pressed to find out ourselves how people can actually refurbish Apple computers because Amazon has decided to clamp down. They have a lot of power. They have a huge amount of power. And we're talking about expansion to make them at least double as expansive as they are right now. I think it's worthy of analysis, debate, and scrutiny.
Yeah, but that's a totally different argument than the argument about whether they should be given a tax break and whether they're going to treat New Yorkers well and the gentrification issue. I mean, whether Amazon
is related.
It's all related. I do actually think that they're related, but I think they're separate issues that need to be debated. I mean, I completely agree with the points you made that Amazon is too powerful. It's become unwieldy. It's had deleterious effects on brick and mortar stores. But, you know, we're all complicit in that because, you know, we give them $110 a year for becoming a member of their service. I mean, if you think about it, when Amazon Prime went from $99 to, I think, $109, they had 100 million subscribers at that time, and each one paid an additional $10 to stay part of Amazon.
You've got an issue with the additional $10. What about the billions of dollars they're getting in tax rebates?
But think about this, though. Almost everybody paid that extra $10. So in one day of them increasing their prices, this is a company that made $1 billion.
Well, they had a pretty good day this week, too, in two cities. And I think they're versions of the same thing, what we're discussing here.
That's true. Yeah. Perhaps. Yeah. In any event, I don't like the outrage politics component of it. I think we need more facts about it. I'm skeptical as well.
I welcome the discussion. I mean, even if I was 100% behind this, and I haven't made up my mind yet, I want to hear a discussion. I don't want someone to say, this is what's going to happen, and you can't do anything about it. I think it's very healthy to be asking questions and raising points.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I mean, I find myself not really agreeing with de Blasio, so I'm skeptical of my own agreement at the moment because de Blasio and Cuomo support it. So.
Wait. It's your position, too. So
I know
if you're not agreeing with de Blasio, you're saying you're not agreeing with yourself.
No, I'm saying I'm in agreement with de Blasio, which is unusual. So that causes me to be skeptical of my own agreement.
Are you in agreement with Cuomo?
They're both in agreement together.
I know. That's what's so weird.
Yes, I know. Yeah. It's an odd situation.
Hey, we have a phone call. Let's see what our listeners have to say here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment about Amazon.
Yes, go ahead.
I think that in the long run, Amazon is going to turn into like a Bill Gates Foundation type of situation where he's going to destroy competition, create moats, monopolize, destroy retail. Whole Foods will be just a site for shipping. I think it's going to destroy the retail market. It's going to increase rents all over. It's going to have a ripple effect. But in 20 years, when he makes all that money, he's going to have to, you know, give some back by, you know, foundations that are really just tax avoidance, tax reduction schemes. And then after 20 years, we'll all benefit because it's going to destroy New York City as we know it.
Are you someone who lives in New York City?
Yeah. And I see what's going on. We see it with the Duane Reades and the Starbucks and the banks and the lack of atmosphere, the lack of cultural and also get, you know, places that people can get together, can afford to get together. There really isn't anything that, as far as meeting grounds, besides Barnes & Noble, which is might not be there very long.
Yeah.
So, you know, this idea of everyone, there's a book called by Shirley Turkel called, you know, Everyone Alone, something like that. Alone Together. You know, we're going to be alone, and we're going to have the Amazon Prime viewerships and all these Netflixes and all these shows and all these instant, you know, replenishments and all so forth. And, you know, Amazon is an octopus. It suffocates. It's, you know, whether it's batteries where you're directed to buy their batteries, they co-opt businesses that they track and they find that they could, you know, move in on it. And it's going to be like Walmart. Well, Walmart was a low, you know, you could buy things very cheap. Once they knocked out all the competition, the prices were raised, you know?
Yeah, I think you raise a very good point when bringing up Barnes & Noble, because as a publisher, this is something that strikes very close to me. There used to be, back in the day of many zines, there used to be independent bookstores everywhere, all over New York City, Long Island, New Jersey, you name it, there were bookstores. And then the chains moved in. You had your Borders, you had your B. Dalton, you had your Barnes & Noble, and they made all of those stores pretty much closed down because they couldn't compete. And then they found that having a nationwide chain of bookstores wasn't profitable. So they began to shut down. And now we have one major chain left, and it's in danger. And what happens to us when that's gone?
Can I say one last thing?
Go ahead.
It's people don't realize Barnes & Noble is beholden to publishers, which have a monopoly. There are about four or five major publishers in the country, in the world, actually, and they all have a monopoly mafia type of situation where they have these small publishing companies, which are all owned by these four companies. So HarperCollins and Penguin, they have these small so-called publishers. You don't know it. And last thing is, when you purchase an ebook, you don't own it, and you can't transfer it, and when you die, it's not yours to give to anyone.
That's a very good point. I didn't even think about passing on ebooks to your next of kin, but that's a fascinating concept. Thank you so much for that call. Very interesting points you brought up. Our phone number, 347-335-0818. We're discussing Amazon, and They're moving into New York City and kicking Apple refurbishers off of their platform. I think it's going to be a topic that many of us are discussing.
To echo the caller's point, I think he's absolutely right about his description of what Amazon will cause. However, he used the future tense. I think this is really already happening with Amazon. Mm-hmm. I mean, we see this constantly. And what he described as occurring throughout Manhattan, which is, you know, this brilliant juxtaposition of having a Duane Reade next to a Bank of America, next to a Pinkberry, next to a Hale & Hardy, next to a Chipotle. I mean, you see it happening all throughout the city. All the mom and pop stores are going out of business.
Not in the East Village. We have to save the East Village.
It's true,
because there is a movement to keep that from happening there.
You know, if you combine that with the fact that most of the landlords that are putting these places out of business by upping the rents after these extended leases are up, you know, if you combine that with the Amazon issue, you've got a real problem here when it comes to culture and urban environments. I completely agree with that. You know, but the other thing we have to realize is that we can't keep Amazon out. This is already happening. I don't think it has anything to do with the construction of the new Amazon HQ. They can come into any city they want. They can get office space.
Of course.
They can just do it without the tax
break. But the rules don't have to be changed for them to do that. They need the cities. That's the point I'm trying to make. They need to be in places like this. I don't think we need to sell out completely so that they'll come to us. I think they're coming to us regardless.
Well, you know, whether we gave them too many concessions is a valid point. But, you know, the benefits remain to be seen. We will see if we struck a good bargain. Unfortunately, it's going to take time for us to determine whether that was a good deal.
All right, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Oh, hi. Great program, as ever. So many things to say. I barely know where to start, and I understand that there may be other callers, so I'll try to be concise.
Okay.
Last thing first, the publishing world is, you know, the caller brought up some very valid points, but it's an open fight that has been going on for a number of years, and I happen to know a lot about it. Penguin Random, which you mentioned, has a CEO, Marco Dole, who basically brought Amazon to bear a few years back when Amazon was trying to muscle all the remaining publishing houses. He just said, no way, we're not going with this. And Amazon had to back down. You can check this in you know, if you do a search about Penguin Random, Amazon, and the fight, you will see this. So I don't want to spend too much time on that.
Okay.
But, you know, the morale of this is that basically everybody in this environment tries to use the power that they have. So whether it's the small publishing houses, which are disappearing fast and furiously, the bigger publishers who also have to fight for survival, and the octopus that Amazon is, that is trying to strangle everything because it feels it's in a position of doing this. And that brings me to the other bigger fight, you know, for the soul and the life of our city. It's, you know, this has been going on. Basically, I remember when Koch was in power and he opened the city up to bigger scale development when it came to stores. Because if you remember, there was a limit on how big a store could be. And those limits were taken down back then. And then it's been, you know, it's been trickling down faster and faster in terms of the disruption that brought to the people like me who live here and our lifestyle. Because, you know, I mean, you can worry about attracting new business as your lawyer friend, whose name I don't remember, and I know he's a good guy, but he talks a little too much like a politician tonight, meaning Ocasio is not the problem. He said himself that there is no clarity, there was no information. And the people who struck this wicked deal are the ones who did it in secret. So that's where the problem starts. It's not Ocasio complaining of how things have gone. It's the people who are speaking for us, supposedly, who are not telling us what they're doing. And that, I think, is a major problem. That also speaks to your general philosophy and the philosophy of who listens to this program. We have to question power. And Ocasio, not because I particularly like her, but she's the one who is asking questions. And people should ask more questions. And then one last thing I would like to say is about where congratulations on the merger between Apple and Amazon. I love the idea. And my personal bet would be that Amazon is going to buy Apple. Because they will become just another specialty that they offer. And, you know, it's up to us. I do it in my daily life, not just only as a political choice, but as a life choice of questioning all this by working on our own technology. It's not that difficult, as you guys know very well. It's you know, babies do this. So people should learn more that they have the power with their hands and their minds to influence where life is going. Apple has got a terrible business model that is very similar to the one of the networks, the social networks, that is keeping people stupid and dependent. I mean, if you can't even change a battery on an iPhone, why would you even consider buying one? I never did, never will. I am done with all Apple products, and I don't even want to hear the name anymore. And I think that people should do that, and they're doing it because I see what's happening to the stock price. So that's all I have to say. I mean, right. I have a lot more.
Well, thank you so much. No, thank you so much for articulating that so well. And I agree with most everything you say, but I'm going to let Alex chime in as well. But thanks for calling and opening up the phone lines for one more or a couple more, 347-335-0818. I can't even eat apples anymore. That's the effect it's had on me. And, you know, I don't know. Apple is what, a $1 trillion business now? So Amazon's going to buy them? It's too big, you know? Who can keep up with all this?
It's something. I'd never really liked apples, eating them, or, you know, I do use them, though. I think the caller makes a fair point. I agree with his premise that questioning authority and questioning power is our job and the job of politicians.
Are you running for office? You sound like a politician now.
No.
You're not saying no. Wow.
Maybe okay. one day I'll run for, like, you know, school
Rob,
commissioner.
Rob, remember this moment. This
like
is
that.
This is the moment that
this is it. This is
yeah, I think the idea got planted
hey,
in his
I would,
head.
I would never rule it out, but I do think that if we should question on the right basis, right? Outrage for the sake of outrage, outrage on the wrong basis, you know, for instance, solely on the basis of a tax break or on these hypothetical concerns of health care and wages and whatnot, if they're not well-founded, if these questions and this outrage is not well-founded, it's ultimately going to undermine her credibility okay. and the efficacy of our ability to continue to question authority later on.
But I've heard two callers so far, and they were very articulate in their concerns about this. And I imagine, you know, the people questioning it on all levels are pointing to some actual facts.
Our callers are always articulate and wonderful, and I don't necessarily always agree with them. I think that the immediate outrage here actually did more to undermine her credibility in the long term. It just the tax break issue just doesn't resonate with me. I mean, that speaks to me of a naivete when it comes to economic development. And this is somebody who's a 29-year-old congresswoman-elect. We expect her to understand how these things work, how they operate. This is how businesses are attracted to New York. This is how businesses are attracted everywhere in the country. This is why Walmart is located in Bentonville, Arkansas.
It's how businesses, I mean, I'm not an expert either, but I imagine it's how businesses are attracted to places that they wouldn't ordinarily go. You know, in the middle of some field someplace in some underdeveloped part of the nation. This is New York City. People want to come here. Businesses want to come here. And again, I think the deal could have been so much better. I think there should have been more discussion, some discussion. And I think that's what the reaction you're seeing right now is.
But, you know, to the caller's point, he's right. A lot of these discussions happened behind closed doors. It wasn't really a transparent process. We don't know necessarily what the government was offering to Amazon. That's a big problem. You know, that's a problem that we should be addressing with de Blasio and with Cuomo, frankly, because we don't know about those negotiations. And I'm sure that there are FOIL requests being drafted right now, if they haven't been submitted already, about what these negotiations were. Those communications, those negotiations belong to the people. We should get at them. We should figure this out and then have a proper debate.
All right, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, hi, guys. I know your show's almost done. It's going to keep it short and sweet.
Go ahead.
I don't know. I after seeing Before the Toys R Us, I solely kind of like blamed it on Walmart and Amazon. Because if you can get something online and get it delivered within a week, that explains it right there. Plus, I noticed that Amazon, they have a lot of the merchandise is from China, and that kind of plays a kind of a shady role in this too. Apple, it's a great product. They make quality, very robust stuff, but their marketing is very bad. You know, the way they come out with phones, they go in numeric order, and when they get to the 8 mile, they skip to X, which means 10 in Roman numerals. They have a number a 9 edition, and they come out with a phone, and 6 months from now they come out with a larger phone. and people are going to want the larger form of the fact that they want that phone so bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why when Steve Jobs was alive, he was like the brains behind Apple. He knew exactly what the customer wanted. But the whole marketing is like terrible now.
Well,
but, after seeing the fall of Toys R Us, because how do you take out something like Toys R Us that's been around before all of us were born? Toys R Us came out like in the 20s or 30s, and they just, you know, they like expanded over the years.
I'm not sure what the connection is with Toys R Us.
I'm just saying, like, Toys R Us, they closed down really because they were losing sales because you have Walmart and Amazon.
The thing about Toys R Us is that it's a very different story. Like, the narrative was a lot of, because of Amazon now they can't make money. But really, if you look into Toys R Us's particular story, it was actually brought down by shady investors who knew full well what they were doing. They were offloading a ton of debt onto a struggling company and then letting it sink. And, you know, there are articles written about it. It's worth doing some web searches to look more deeply into it. But that really didn't have as much to do with the whole Amazon thing as a lot of people think.
Wow, Rob, I didn't know you knew so much about Toys R Us.
Yeah, I worked there in a past life.
Oh, you did? Wow, okay. Well, interesting.
Good night, guys.
All right, thanks for your call. And we have time for more. 347-335-0818. Learning so much tonight. This is good.
And I like taking calls earlier on in the show. I think we should continue this practice.
Well, when you take up a controversial position, as you have, and credit to you for doing so, you get a lot of calls, a lot of people. But I welcome the dialogue. And, you know, I just wish we had more of a dialogue before things were signed. That's the thing. Have things been signed? Can things be changed? Is it too late?
I don't know. Should we debate Alex Jones now?
Oh, no.
You don't want to go back to that?
Don't go down that road. Okay, no, I'm just, right. With this Amazon thing going to Long Island City, can the deal be improved? I think if it's possible, let's talk about it.
I would like to think that's a question worth asking. I think most questions are worth asking.
All right, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. I was wondering, you mentioned earlier about not being able to bequeath one's books if one has e-books.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been wondering for a long time, how aware is Amazon if somebody dies, and what do they do? Do they make their Kindle library vanish if the Kindle Wi-Fi is turned off? Can the Kindle be handed to somebody and with the Wi-Fi off for a limited lifespan?
Yeah, these are great questions, and I don't know the answer, because it's different than something tangible. They can turn it off. You don't really own it. And we're just seeing that more and more, whether it's a computer, an operating system, even a car, you have less and less control over it.
Yeah, I know multiple...
Could people send in any experiences they've had with someone dying and what became of their Kindle and their Kindle library?
Yeah, we would love to hear that. oth@2600.com is our email address, Rob.
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, because I know I have a library on Kindle with some stuff that I've bought, and I know my wife and I are in the same household, so both of our Amazon accounts can access the same pool of stuff that I'd bought. But I don't know what happens to that if I pass, when I pass eventually.
Do you have an e-will?
maybe
is that a thing? I mean, I don't even know.
Maybe I should do one. I mean, there are dealers.
They say quite distinctly that you don't own it and you can't pass it on. I was just wondering whether there were dodges to be used if they're not fully aware, or if your Kindle's Wi-Fi is off, they can't make the books disappear.
That question I'm not entirely sure about. Holding on to your digital copies. But I will say, though, that this has, over the last few years, become a sort of niche area of the law, the credentials management for the deceased. Because when somebody passes away, they may be the only person who has access to their banking records, to their bank accounts, to their insurance policies, to DMV records, to access to media and things like that. And it actually becomes a real issue for probate courts to address and for lawyers to have to navigate to try to fight these particular companies to get access for the next of kin to all these various records. And it's a complete disaster.
it is actually a really, really difficult thing to do, is they don't make it easy for you to hand over your account to a second person.
And not just that. Think about, old records of communications through email. Think about cryptocurrency. Access to all of these things that might only be in the head of one person is no longer with us.
And then two-factor authentication layered on top of that makes this really, really difficult.
Wow. Thanks for bringing that up, Carl. We've got a lot to worry about now.
You're welcome.
All right. Take care. I think we have time for one more call, 347-335-0818. Rob.
Yeah, it's certainly a concern because, I mean, I know I've seen as a computer guy that a lot of people know, I've been approached many times by friends and family, you know, can you get into such and such as computer because they're no longer with us? And, you know, some people leave means for that to be done as part of their arrangements. And some
you
people
get
don't.
Those emails. I get the ones that say, I think my girlfriend's cheating on me. Can you hack her Facebook or something like that?
Oh, I get like those
that.
Too. They're hilarious.
Well, and then if you do it, however, if you access this computer, even of a deceased person, let's say without authorization, you could be violating the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act in doing that and trying to just help the family. And then perhaps, you know, a next of kin could bring a civil lawsuit against you for violating the CFAA or, there's no civil right of action under the New York State computer trespass law, as far as I'm aware. But, it could open up a world of liability if you actually did, in fact, do that without authorization.
You know, no matter how digital we get, lawyers are never going to have a problem finding work.
That is certainly
always
true.
Going to be something there's for them to sue about or to defend somebody against.
There's always an argument.
Okay, you're on off the hook. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. It's funny. I work in the court system, and I've been doing it over 30 years. It's funny the way this is timed out. I will tell you, there aren't resources available to prosecute any of this stuff for every single alleged violation of any type of federal or state law, unless it involves lots of money or little children or lots of heroin, nobody gives a flying goddamn in law enforcement. And so when they threaten people with all the stuff about piracy and you're doing this, let me tell you something. In an average day in court, we see none of it. In 29 years working in various federal and state courts, I think the only cases we ever see, like I said, unless you're moving large quantities of currency or large quantities of drugs or stuff dealing with little babies, nobody cares. So it's all purely theoretical. There's no mechanism in place in terms of a budget or manpower to enforce any of it. And the other thing is always give someone you trust your passwords. That's about it.
Okay, well,
unless you do that.
Yeah, I guess we all have to find somebody we can trust. Thanks for your call, Alex.
Yeah, to his point, you know, the caller is absolutely right when it comes to law enforcement prosecution of these particular actions. For FBI to investigate certain claims or certain Computer Fraud and Abuse Act claims, there is generally a really high threshold. You either have to be targeting a lot of critical sectors of the economy, something like infrastructure, and along some reports, the threshold is really about $2 million worth of loss. I mean, in fact, Steve Rombaum and I have investigated lots of financial frauds together. And what the fraudsters do is they'll target people for sums of money, like around $200,000, $300,000, steal that from 10 or 20 people because they know that law enforcement is not going to spend the resources to prosecute them when they've only stolen $200,000. Now, on the other hand, under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, what we do see quite regularly, in fact, that's why I wasn't here last week, because I had to take a deposition in a Computer Fraud and Abuse Act case the next day, but there is a private right of action under that, meaning that private parties can actually sue for a violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. Those cases are being brought with much higher frequency in the federal courts because it's private resources, not government resources, bringing them.
Okay, let's see if we can squeeze in one more call. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, my name is Ray. I live in Queensbridge Houses, a gunshot away from the proposed Amazon location.
Oh, boy.
Well, the New York Times did a story saying no one was shot at Queensbridge Houses last year. There was four or five shootings are listed with addresses on the Queensbridge website at www.queensbridge.us. Now, regarding all the jobs are supposed to be coming, the high-paying jobs, I suspect those jobs have already been taken by people who'll be moving to New York with those jobs. The only jobs available will be the low-paying service jobs. Those will be obtained through contractors who bid the lowest price for their contract. So the contractor gets the contract because of low bidding, and they hire people at low wages because that's all they can pay because that's what they bid for. I think this is largely, well, I think that Cuomo and de Blasio are country bumpkins who got taken in by Amazon.
Well, I couldn't have said it better, and that's going to have to be the last word for now, but I'm sure the conversation will continue, and hopefully the discussion on what exactly we do now will continue as well. Yeah, you can write to us, oth@2600.com. That's our email address, with your thoughts and opinions on Amazon moving into New York, on Amazon kicking out Apple refurbishers, on anything else really having to do with technology, hacking, things like that.
Yeah, you can tweet at us at Hacker Radio Show. You can find us on mastodon.social as Hacker Radio Show as well.
I have to go over there and see what that's like. So
check it out. It's
yeah, and we'll be back again next week with another exciting show. Tune in and listen now for the Personal Computer Show coming up on WBAI. For Off the Hook, this is Emmanuel. Have a good night.
This is Phil Donahue, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5.
Today is November the 14th, 2018. For the month of November 2018, there are 5 Thursdays. That means that Thanksgiving comes early this year. Next week is Thanksgiving Day, and the day after that is Black Friday. Just remember, the best deal that you're going to get on Black Friday is not buying something you don't need. Do you know who has your personal data? Let me ask the question differently. Do you know who is using your personal data besides Facebook and Google? Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is the original personal computer radio show of all things computing. I'm Hank Key and my colleague is Joe King. Podcasts of the program is available on wbai.org/archive. It's also available on prn.fm and on our website, pcradioshow.org. We are on WBAI-FM 99.5 New York, on the radio, and prn.fm on the internet each Wednesday with essentially the same program, except when WBAI is in a membership drive, the programs are different. If you have any questions for us, just send us email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. Do we need a wallet-sized form factor smartphone? Samsung and a few other companies have been releasing oversized smartphones, referred by some as phablets. Because of their large size, some users have found them to be uncomfortable to use. Many people do want a larger size screen, and that brings us to the present. Samsung introduced the Galaxy F, which features an OLED screen, which folds in half like a wallet, and then a second OLED panel on the outside so the Galaxy F can still be used when it is folded shut. Does the world really need a smartphone that can fold in half so it can be stuffed into a pocket? Well, we're about to find out. Smartphones are featuring new technology like a fingerprint sensor, a brand new camera system with as many as 5 cameras, and a fresh new all-screen display design with a hole cut for the camera instead of a notch. Samsung and Huawei has been in a race to see which company can be the first to show off a foldable smartphone. They both ended up losing when a no-name brand from China showed off a foldable phone last week. That phone will never make it to most markets, though, leaving Samsung as the first company to show off a smartphone with a folding display that will actually be widely available. The 7.3-inch foldable screen makes the Galaxy F more of a tablet than a smartphone, and it has a custom user interface that Samsung and Google reportedly created especially for this device. In order for most people to even consider taking the Galaxy F seriously, it'll need serious developer support. But the design of the Galaxy F has a physical drawback. For one thing, the device will be large when it is folded in half. The Galaxy F is obviously expected to be about twice as thick as the normal flagship phone. Beyond that, Galaxy F is expected to be incredibly expensive at a cost of $1,770. That's a lot of money. Now it's important to put all this in perspective. This is what phablets look like when they first hit the market. It's a first-generation device that is big, bulky, and expensive. It will fit in your pocket, a big pocket that is, but it's not going to be comfortable. Instead, it would be too thick and too heavy. And of course, don't try sitting down with a unit in your back pants pocket. But if there's indeed demand, the Galaxy F will pave the way for foldable smartphone designs of the future that will be thinner and probably a lot more sleek. But if there's no demand after a few years, well, it'll become a part of trivial history. The smartphone business has been the introduction of new models with short product life cycles, which in turn results in constant stream of smartphone sales. Over time, the buying public will not be interested in the latest and greatest at unaffordable prices. The high-end smartphones are approaching $2,000. That's $2,000 of net income. I have a beef with class action lawsuits. The U.S. Supreme Court justices in an internet privacy case involving Google disagreed over whether to rein in a form of settlement in class action lawsuits that awards money to charities and other third parties instead of people affected by the alleged wrongdoing. The $8.5 million Google settlement was challenged by an official at a Washington-based think tank, and some of the court justices shared his concerns about potential abuses in these awards, including excessive fees going to plaintiffs' lawyers. Some of the justices emphasized that such settlements can funnel money to good use in instances which dividing the money among large numbers of plaintiffs would result in negligible per-person payments. A California resident filed a proposed class action lawsuit in 2010 in San Jose federal court claiming Google's search protocols violated federal privacy law by disclosing users' search terms to other websites. A lower court upheld a settlement where the company agreed to pay in 2013 to resolve the claims. Critics, however, have said that the settlements, known as CPRAE awards, are unfair and encourage frivolous lawsuits, conflicts of interest, and collusion between both sides to minimize damages for defendants while maximizing fees for plaintiffs' lawyers. Supporters have said these settlements can benefit causes important to victims and support underfunded entities such as legal aid. The three main plaintiffs in this case receive $5,000 each for representing the class. Their attorneys received about $2.1 million. Under the settlement, the rest of the money would go to organizations or projects that promote internal privacy, including at Stanford University and the AARP, a lobbying group for older Americans, but nothing to the millions of Google users who the plaintiffs were to have represented in the class action. CPRAE awards, which remains rare, gives money that cannot feasibly be distributed to participants in a class action suit to unrelated entities as long as it would be in the plaintiff's interest. Justice Alito raised concerns that the money would go to groups that some plaintiffs might not like but have no say in opposing it. Chief Justice Roberts noted that AARP engages in political activity. Roberts also said it was fishy that settlement money could be directed to institutions which Google already was a donor. Justice Kavanaugh noted some beneficiary institutions were also the alma mater of lawyers involved in the case. Justice Ginsburg said that at least the plaintiffs get an indirect benefit from the settlement. And Justice Sonia Sotomayor added that it seems like the system is working. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said each of the 129 million U.S. Google users who theoretically could have claimed part of it would have received a paltry 4 cents in recovery. That's 4 pennies. During the arguments, several justices, both liberal and conservative, wonder whether the plaintiffs had suffered harm through their internet searches sufficiently to justify suing in federal court, signaling that they may dismiss the case rather than deciding on the fate of CPRAE settlements. Class action lawsuits, the only winner in all cases are the lawyers. Is it the Christmas spirit or is it really competition? I think it's competition. What am I talking about? Competition for online holiday shoppers are heating up, and Amazon announced that it is offering free shipping with no minimum purchases for orders that will arrive in time for Christmas. And as previously reported, Amazon's competitor Walmart announced it will expand its free 2-day shipping options in November. Millions of additional items on its website sold by third-party sellers will qualify for the free 2-day shipping perk. Well, those are the big two. Hey, wait a minute, there's another one. Target also announced it would offer, for the first time, 2-day shipping with no minimum purchase this holiday. The offer starts November 1 and it ends December the 22nd. Competition brings out the best in companies. Wait a minute, competition brings out the best prices from companies. The following are a composite of technical questions received in our email bag. A listener asked if he could downgrade Windows 10 to 7 on a newly purchased system. First, a little background. Why did he want to take a brand new system installed with the latest version of Windows 10 and have it downgraded? There are two classes of application programs. Most of us are familiar with commodity software applications. This is the type of software that is widely available for many suppliers, and it is targeted to a wide audience, meeting a wide variety of use. An example of this is Microsoft Office. Then we have vertical software applications built to support a specific function and or process that are unique to that user group. An example of this is a tax preparation program. Then we have some vertical application programs that are very specific to an industry, like to dentists, doctors, in other words, people running their own small business. A listener asked if he could downgrade Windows 10 to 7 on a newly purchased system because he had a vertical software application for the visually impaired that will not run on Windows 10. It was an XP application. He was able to run it on Windows 7 in XP compatibility mode. It was a simple two-step to set up installation. That is to say, properties followed by selecting the XP compatibility tab. That was easy. With Windows 10, you have to navigate through and test up to 10 separate points to find if the XP program can run in Windows 10. Even if the program runs, Microsoft issued a disclaimer that the program may not necessarily run without problems. So he decided to downgrade the operating system. The listener purchased a new system and had anticipated the ability to run this specific vertical application on Windows 10. But he couldn't find the XP compatibility mode in Windows 10, and at least he thought there was none. Well, there is XP support, but it's not direct, nor is it clear cut. You have to navigate through and test up to 10 separate points to determine if the XP program can run in Windows 10. Why didn't Microsoft just make it so that instead of stopping at up to 10 separate points, you just go right through it and not to require the user to step through? Another related question from another user is, Windows 7 is no longer sold. He can download a copy of Windows 7, but he needs a product code to install it. If you just need the software, you can still buy